Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I am joined by my friend, my confidant. No, I'm kidding. But the one and only Kyle Bukauskas of Hockey Night in Canada of Sportsnet. It's been really cool that you came on my 100th show, and it's been awesome getting to know you throughout the Sens season. We were just hanging out, I guess, with Steve Staios and Linus Allmark. But
Yeah, just the
Kyle.
four of us.
Just the four of us, yeah. What a retreat. Well, I guess for you, you're in that grind of a season. It's not exactly like you're putting your body on the line, like maybe Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid. But I'm guessing for you, what's it like just to go through a Stanley Cup final and do game after game, travel, like the whole shebang as a ringside reporter?
You say not putting my body on the line. I mean, have you ever taken an Uber with David Amber? Like the size of those guys' shoulders, you think there's any room left for me to sit there crushed up against the window? There's a lot of physical sacrifice over the course of the playoffs, let me tell you. No, I'm kidding. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot, but it's the best time of year, so it's just all fun. And the final is great. I mean, this past year, exponentially so, just to have a Canadian team in the mix, and there's just an added element of intrigue, and the amount of people that are paying close attention that maybe wouldn't otherwise if it was a US-US matchup. So that made it more fun. And I think as the years have gone on, you find different ways to try to help keep your energy up to where it needs to be. Whether it's, putting an emphasis on, I don't know, going for a walk or some sort of exercise, maybe picking your spots of when to go for, a post-game beverage or somewhere. But I just love during the final, like having all like the panels
Everyone.
on the road, like there's just more of our colleagues there. It just adds to the whole weight of each game and how much is at stake, and the atmospheres and the buildings, of course, are at its peak. So yeah, it's a lot when you get through it, you're like, okay, you're ready for a breather. But yeah, I would way rather be doing that than anything else right now. So, and yeah, last spring was a real fun one.
I guess you just needed to go to Vegas to unwind right after, like a day after.
Yes, yeah, what a great way to do it. Just to put your feet up. As you know, in Vegas, everything is really close by. The temperatures are very moderate, especially at the end of June. The sun is, there, but not really a factor. It's quiet. Everything
Much
closes down
going on.
early. Yeah. It was, and then that was like the draft in Vegas was, man,
How cool
they
was this?
knocked it out of the park. There was a group of us that went over the day before. There was doing a bit of a production rehearsal. Like Sam Cosentino, Dave Amber, like Chuck Fletcher, Jason Buchla. We all walked in through, come in on like the ground floor, got our credential and everything. And then we like walked in kind of right where like the draft floor is, all the tables and stuff set up. And like all of us in unison, like looked up at the screen and like at once we're like, whoa. It was incredible to see it in person. And also like to then how high up the seats go there. Like, I mean, I guess,
I
go
still
ahead.
remember you. I think you're interviewing Flames fans. I could be mistaken, but you're
Yep.
super high up and just, and I'm like, I'd be a bit afraid. Like, do I, if I turn around too quickly, trip and fall to my.
Well, yeah, like, 'cause it's steep. It's steep up there, compared to like your typical arena. So like you've got to be careful. I imagine if you're there for a concert or something, and you've had a few cocktails, like you've got to have your wits about you as you're going back down to your seats if you're sitting up top there. But it was just a really neat setup. I mean, the stage was a little bit tighter than in past years. Man, like I'll be really bummed as we move forward here, and if it does in fact become more of a hybrid model where the teams are remote. Because I loved that was so unique about the NHL and all the tables with the team logos all set up, everyone in one place. And I think for the fans too, I mean, it's such a joy for them if you're going to the draft and it's just hockey people everywhere you look throughout the city, like you're walking down the street to go for a bite to eat and there's the general manager of the Minnesota Wild, and then there's the head coach of the Florida Panthers. You know, like it's just there's faces that you recognize if you're a big hockey fan, and they're all in the same city with you. So that sort of stuff, I think, you know, we'll all really miss. But it was a if that that's how it ends up going, a great way to go out.
Would you be open to the Sphere being almost like the mainstay for the draft for years to come, kind of like in the NBA? It's in Brooklyn or New York. It has been the draft for a long time. Like I feel like it went great, and on TV it was awesome. There was plenty of memes with some of the reactions to players, and the fans seemed to be having a ball. Like, do you think there's any way that that can become a mainstay for the draft?
I don't know. Because I imagine it wasn't cheap.
True.
So I'm curious. Like I also am a big fan of, all right, like that went great. Like, okay, how can we be a little bit different the next time around? I think at least now that they've opened the door to this after, you know, traditionally for a lot of years doing arenas, their own arenas, to go somewhere different here, and now maybe they get, you know, even more creative and going somewhere that we haven't quite thought about yet. So either way, yeah, would happy be happy to go back again, or would we be happy to watch the draft from there again. But if it's somewhere else that the NHL hasn't been before, you know, I love the innovation side of it too.
Maybe going back a little bit to last year, was there a moment throughout the playoff run that kind of sticks out in your mind when you look back at the 2024 playoffs and the Oilers almost coming back and their run, and obviously Florida being so dominant throughout the whole playoffs as well?
Yeah, it was I mean the atmosphere in game six there in Edmonton. I mean, each game I did the third round when they played Dallas and then the final, but that one in particular because of everything surrounding it, right? I mean, the chance to force a game seven, Oilers fans knew win or lose, this was the last time they were seeing them on in their building. That was a energy and electricity that I'll never forget, and the fact that you know, turned into a bit of a blowout, not game four blowout, but you kind of felt pretty early on in the night which way this was going to go. That sort of stuff sticks with you, and just incredible that, you know, the fans, when you would go to leave the building, because we would walk back to our hotel afterwards, and just the mood that everybody was in. You know, I felt that when they knocked off Dallas, of course, to get to the final, and then certainly that night as well. You just it's a really neat scene to just kind of get caught up in and look around and think like, man, this is really cool, right? Especially that city had waited a while for a chance to be that close to a Stanley Cup again. It was all just really, really wonderful memories. So that sticks out, you know, getting a chance to catch up with a friend of the show, Charles Barkley, again was a lot of fun. I actually talked to met Travis Kelce briefly in Dallas during the third round. That was a real highlight. Yeah. Would have loved to interview him. He wasn't into doing anything on camera that night, which is totally understandable. But I don't know if you listened to you know, his broadcast with
Yeah,
his
New
brother there, New
Heights.
Heights. I caught a few episodes. Like I don't see it every or listen to it every week. But they interviewed Andrew Santino. Like it would have been just before like I was down there, and all of a sudden he's at the game. And I'm a big fan of his. Like I love watching Dave. He does a great did a great job on that show. So and I'm usually not one to do this. Like typically my shy nature kind of takes over. But I'm standing in like the suite that he was in because we were waiting to interview Bryson DeChambeau. So he was also in the same suite. So I'm kind of standing there like fish out of water, going like I shouldn't be here, but we were just waiting for DeChambeau to show up. So I'm just trying to stay out of everybody's way. But at one point, like we just kind of made eye contact, and he gives, you know, the smile and nod kind of thing, and I'm like, screw it, I'm going for it. So I just said, hey, I said, don't want to bother you. I just said I really enjoyed, you know, your interview with Santino there not too long ago. You know, that was a really enjoyed listening to it. He's like, oh my man, thank you. Like daps me up. I'm like, holy Jesus. He's like, yeah. He goes, he's the man. He goes, you know him at all? I'm like, no, I don't know him at all. I go, just a fan. And anyway, and then at that point, of course, like, you know, quit while you're ahead. Don't prolong the conversation anymore than you need to before it goes south. I just said, yeah, I don't want to interrupt your night, but just wanted to say that. And you know, I just said congrats with, you know, everything. He was, oh, thank you very much. Thank you. But just really gracious. And then it was hilarious watching him watch the game. Like he was like, because
Interesting.
typically, like those guys, they show up there, they're in a suite, right? It's so easy to be caught up with other distractions in there. You're talking to people, you're not really paying attention to the game as much. Kelsey was like jumping around, like hitting his buddies on the shoulder, like anytime there was a chance or like a big hit, he was locked into it, right? Like I know he played a bit of hockey
Yeah.
growing up, but he was totally all in on, well, the Stars that night. He was right there, so that was cool to watch.
You know, all the Swifties that love this show just love that you were, a couple degrees of separation from Taylor Swift. So I had to mention that.
Right.
I'm
Yes.
kidding. I'm kidding. But
Yes.
was that one of the kind of the moments for you where you're, as you said, a little bit starstruck? Like, I know we talked about this before, but being in the public eye, meeting so many people, especially in the hockey world, but just in general, like, is there, do you, does it become more natural to you, where it's like, oh, that's just Wayne Gretzky, whatever, maybe you don't think it that dramatically, but just in terms of you, it kind of becomes numb, or do you still have all these like pinch me moments with your job?
Yeah, I think certainly internally, and it's more so like the players that I like would have grown up watching. Certainly when I was like really young, when like you see them as these larger than life people, and that kind of always sticks with you as you grow up and you think back to watching these players at their heights of their careers. So there's a little bit of that, and then yeah, with Kelsey, I mean, I just, as I say, like typically I'm a shy person. Like I wouldn't have said anything, but I don't know what came over me then, where I just thought, oh, I'm gonna go for it. I guess because of how inviting he seemed. But it was one of those where at the time you're like, you're just talking to the guy. And then I remember afterwards, like calling my wife that night and being like, you'll never guess what happened. Like that was like really cool. So little stuff like that, but in terms of starstruck, I mean, you clearly you respect what other athletes or people in the public eye have accomplished. But yeah, the other one, I mean, we've talked about like Paul Kariya was my favorite player, and remember I got to meet him years ago in California through Jason York. Him and I both worked on the Canadiens broadcasts back then, and their buddies, right? Because they were teammates in Anaheim for a little bit and still kept in touch. So they went and for dinner that night, and Jason said, come by afterwards, and did the guy just meet him. Like that was like wow. Because I grew up everything hockey wise was about him. Wore number 9 because of him. He was drafted the year I was born. He retired the year I graduated high school. Like the true definition of like childhood hero, and he still looks fantastic. Like he could still play, but yeah. So that was one. If you think now, like in the years that I've been working in this business, that was the one where that was starstruck.
You know, I always marvel looking at you and covering like the Stanley Cup Finals, because I know me, if I was in your position and I was, the first person to interview the Cup champs right after, I'd be, nervous as a rock. Like, how do you go through it, have all your questions prepared, like in that moment? Does it, like, I'm not saying it feels like any random game in Ottawa, but does it, what's that kind of preparation like for you, just, for the finals? Is it any different? Is there anything, any other pressure? Just kind of walk us through the your kind of work process for that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work. Like as soon as like the way I do it, and I don't know how others in the past or what the right way is to do it, and I'm certainly not suggesting this is. But typically, when a team gets to 3 wins, then okay, now they're 1 win away. So I dive into I go through basically the whole team effectively, like everyone you think there's a chance, we could interview and coaches and the GM. And I just spend time going through and just trying to find little nuggets that may be worth bringing up in the interview, just to be prepared. And so maybe that helps with staying calm in the moment because I've done the work beforehand and I've got that to fall back on. But I mean, at least when typically the first few guys, like it's just the emotion is so raw, you're just you're having them describe what they're feeling. Like you're very much in the moment, as opposed to, you know, when you were 12 years old, you went and you said you were gonna, you told your dad, you know, I don't know. Like there's stuff that maybe later on in the night, as it's kind of sunk in and the cup's been handed out, and just the state of the player is a little bit different than, like, you know, 5 minutes after the horn sounds. Then that's when you typically kind of, maybe I'll work some of that stuff in. But yeah, it is. I kind of lock go into witness protection and lock myself in my hotel room and just gotta grind through it all, because you want to be prepared and be able to do the players justice. You know, getting a chance to speak their mind at the height of their careers. And yeah, you just want to make sure you're ready for it all. So
Did you make sure that Paul Maurice shouted out the Winnipeg Jets when he had that, or
I didn't make sure of nothing. No, I, as I say, I just had to stand there with the microphone. Like that was almost, I didn't need to do any prep for that. Like it was just, you let them go. So that was a neat one. It was just, again, you totally got a sense of how much that meant to him and how long he's been in the game. You know, I mean, got kind of close with Carolina in 02, but let's face it, would have been something if they had beat that Detroit team. Ran out of gas a year ago and almost had it slip through their fingers last year, but finally got it done. So yeah, I was happy for him, and just say he had so many great sound bites all throughout the playoffs and the one before that too, and then continued to have more great ones at the parade with the shirt with his cats on it. Yeah, just a gem of a man. So it was neat to be able to stand there next to him as he was letting it all out.
Well, from last season to this season, there's been a lot of, some tragedy, obviously, in the hockey world as well, but a lot of news. Just earlier, Leon Draisaitl signed a, 8-year extension. I just want to know, like, watching him up close, like, and seeing him making, a lot of money, $14 million a year. How is this? Does it feels like this is a deal that really benefits both sides of the Oilers and Draisaitl. And what do you think this maybe means for the Oilers moving forward with him locked up for 9 years now?
Yeah, I think it's a great sign for Edmonton to try to keep this window open as long as they possibly can to finish the job, right? That they got so close to doing. I mean, there's no, I know when he was asked about it yesterday, he's going, "Hey, I'm just worried about me. I mean, Connor's going to do his thing when the time comes for him to sign his next deal," which absolutely, of course, that's what you're going to say. But like, there's no question the relationship between the two, how close they've become, how they've been attached at the hip for so many years. You know, that only bodes well, the fact that he's re-up for the long haul, that their captain's gonna likely follow suit here, right? Like, so long as they believe they have a chance to win in Edmonton, you know, I think they're gonna, it seems like they're gonna continue to stay there. We know Leon is. So I just believe, and I'm sure they know, you know, one of the better chances that they do have is if they're continuing to play together. Of course, I think they've learned over time, and Leon even touched on it the other day about how it can't just be a two-man team, right? You need to have quality depth around you. And I think the organization has gone through learning that as well, and they've done a better job at surrounding them with the necessary support that they need, and you know, having good goaltending. I'm a big believer in Stuart Skinner, and he certainly had his moments of brilliance over their run, along with some tough times as well. So yeah, I think it's a great thing. You know, like here he could have wrote his own ticket and had blank checks issued to him from everywhere if he wanted to. But he chose to stay in Edmonton. So great for the market, great for him getting, you know, what stands, at least for now, at least for one more year, the biggest contract in NHL history. Yeah, and I think he's worth every penny with how good of a player he can be when he's at his peak. I didn't probably have the Stanley Cup final that he wanted to have, but nevertheless, I think, you know, we're still very much in the prime years of Leon Draisaitl. And I really liked what he said, that you know, he's asked about, you know, the pressure now of signing this big deal, and he was like, "I don't look at it as pressure. It's more of a responsibility. Like, and I really like the way he framed it, saying that, like, understands obviously the ownership, how much money they're paying him, and how much this all means to the community, the fact that he's staying and their desire to have a winner. I really like that answer from him, and I think speaks volumes to kind of how he approached this whole negotiation and ultimately deciding to stay with the Oilers.
With that, maybe the responsibility for him and McDavid is to bring the cup back home to Edmonton, and they were obviously so close last year, or I guess this year, but in the playoffs. But for you, what's that maybe missing? That they lost Broberg and Holloway obviously to the offer sheets, and that might be another topic for another day, in terms of how that might change the landscape of how RFAs are in this league. But in terms of the team, do you think it's better than it was, in the playoffs last year? What's that maybe missing piece that they need to add, or that they maybe already have to get over the hump next season?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say, like, when you're 2 goals away from winning the Stanley Cup, to say, like, well, there's this piece that they were missing, right? Like, you're so close to it. But yeah, that's the tough reality, is that you work just as hard as the Panthers did. You wanted it just as bad as them, but you get nothing at the end of the day. I really like that. I think, as I said, as they've gotten more depth, I mean, the Zach Hyman deal has turned out to be a franchise changer for them. Just incredible the impact that he has, especially again into the playoffs too, into the Stanley Cup final. Like, the way he touched the game, really fascinating to watch. I bring back a guy like Connor Brown, who, I mean, talked about struggled out of the gate, I think, because he was still dealing with lingering issues from what kept him out basically the entire season prior. But you could see him start to find his groove in the playoffs. I just For him, you hope that it continues to grow, and his comfort level there, and confidence to make plays and to be an impact in a contributing way a little more often. I just thought, we were talking about it earlier, Alex, like the fact that Evander Kane wasn't 100% as the playoffs wore on. And missed some games in the final there because of his health. Just to have that little extra weapon offensively, certainly hurt. Defensively, they're a team that's been kind of had that notion that they're not great in that area for years past. But I thought there was incredible growth in that regard over the playoffs. I mean, of course, I think of Philip Roberg being the one that grew a lot and learned a lot in a short period, and he's not there anymore. But you think about the player that Evan Bouchard's becoming, and going through the lineup, I think there's still a lot there for this group to think, hey, we can be back there and to try to rewrite the ending.
Were you surprised that they didn't match the offer sheets for Broberg and Holloway? Because they would have been in cap purgatory if they had, even for one of them.
Yeah, I guess I wondered about Holloway because, the number was, considerably less compared to what the one that Broberg signed. And I thought that maybe they viewed him as a middle six piece that they valued going forward, just given how early he is still in his career. So that was one I thought they were going to bite on, and then just figure out the cap situation from there, right? You decide, hey, this is a player that we need, and we'll deal with the rest afterwards. But yeah, I think it's also a good insight to kind of where the management is at right now, and going, okay, if you guys want them with those numbers, we'll take the draft picks, and we'll also take the cap spaces, as you say, right? Like, there is something to be said for being able to accrue cap space over the year to give them some more flexibility come trade deadline time or other points in the year to make your team a little bit better. I think you saw like Florida being able to bring in Vladimir Tarasenko, and it seemed like it was like one goal a series, right? That was very impactful and timely. And that makes a huge difference. So I think that's to see their thinking on that front was intriguing to me. But yeah, it is like there's always that feeling of the premium on young players who you think have potential. It's not easy to let them go, but Clearly, the upside to having a bit more flexibility was enough for them to be able to say goodbye and good luck.
I guess with that moving from a team that's had success in the playoffs, I want to go to the Leafs, who you've obviously covered for many years and been at a lot of their playoff failures. I think almost all of them of late. But for you, were you surprised that, the mantle has been passed from John Tavares to Austin Matthews, in terms of the captaincy, and how does that you think maybe affect Matthews' game, the team on the ice, and maybe does it change the outcome in your mind a little bit where this team might be, like how much does a captain being the captain really mean in today's NHL in your mind, Kyle?
Yeah, I don't. I mean that one a little tougher for me to answer just because I'm not in the room, right? So, I won't pretend to know truly how valuable it is. But was I surprised? No, I can't. Only because I mean, I remember hearing some rumblings quietly, like shortly after they were knocked out by Boston in the spring, that was something that they would potentially be considering. And I don't believe, of course, if you're John Tavares and you're told, hey, look, we want to make a change on the captaincy front, it can't be the greatest feeling in the world, but I think he is a professional. Clearly, is supporting Austin in this when they had their press conference announcing the change. So I think there's going to be no issue there, and I don't think. There's what is this? How does this change Austin's approach? And I don't think it changes it a bit for him. Like he has his way of going about it. You hear all the time from teammates about how much work he puts in behind the scenes, how he prepares himself, and you see publicly how he carries himself in the media. In and around kind of the market there, that can be demanding at times. He's got it figured out. I give him a lot of credit. And now just because he's the captain, I don't think any of that will change in any way. I think will that mean, now a different outcome in the playoffs? I'm not sure one directly relates to another, but certainly for players in the room, like regardless of where the letters sit, who the leaders are and whose voice and way they go about things that you tend to follow there. So I think he's becoming more and more of that guy over the last few seasons. You hear about, oh, he's more vocal than he was in years past. And you just see the way he can command certain situations. It seemed like it was only a matter of time.
I'll just call him Captain Poppy now.
There you go.
obviously, the other, big part of the offseason or maybe lack of movement has been the Mitch Marner situation. You've been around the team, as I said before, a lot. How much do you think going into to the final year of his contract, the media pressures of Toronto, like how does this end well? I'm just thinking to myself, Kyle, like how does this work out for the Leafs, for Marner? It just feels like maybe, a time for divorce, but I don't know. They've re-upped Nylander. Obviously, they re-up Matthews. It looks like they probably will with Tavares. Like, what do you think will happen with Marner this season in terms of his prospects to stay with this team long term?
Yeah, man, I don't know either. Like I was thinking something was going to happen this summer. Just in my own mind, like I didn't have, per se any intel into it all. Now I just really curious to see how they play this. Because that's going to be the number one topic on the opening day of training camp. And then, if for whatever reason, whether things get off to a slow start for the team or for him personally, like the heat's only going to go up. I wonder then what do you do? I mean, hopefully for Mitch's sake and the team's sake that's not the case. Like, you see at times over the years clearly where the extra attention around whatever it may be hasn't always been the brought the best out of him. Like you just hope the kid is happy and can play free because when he does, it's really entertaining to watch. So however this goes, hopefully the ultimate resolution is something that both teams can or both sides, I should say, can walk away from, whether they continue to be married together or not for the long haul, that they can say, hey, we gave it our best shot, and it was just, whether we're continuing this, we gave it our best shot and we think, yes, it can work, or we gave it our best shot and think, hey, it's best for both parties to go separate ways. Like, you just don't want it to turn ugly, right? Because that's no fun for anybody. And as you know, in that market, if it does, it'll be ratcheted up a few more notches than in most places. Yeah, I'm as curious as any to see where it goes, because I think you're leaving a lot of variables out there going into the year in this state. And a lot of the, I think, early results will dictate kind of how things go from there.
How did you like the off season for the Leafs? Like, outside of, maybe inaction with Marner and obviously the captaincy with Matthews. Do you think this team is markedly better than they were going into the playoffs last year? Where do you see this Leafs team in the kind of the on the playoff front?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're like clearly a perennial playoff team, and I don't think there's anything that's happened where you suggest, oh man, have they taken themselves out of that conversation? And I don't think there's been quite enough even around their own division where you think, oh, there's a number of teams that could really challenge them now for at least one of the top three spots. Yeah, I don't mind kind of how they've kind of reshaped their defense. I'm a big Joseph Woll guy. But the health is a big question. So I wonder what kind of opportunity like Anthony Stolarz is going to get. He's a huge guy, by the way. Like,
What,
one
six,
thing being around
seven?
the Panthers, and just like big, like thick shoulders, thick back and all
Ooh.
that. Like, he's a large human. Like, he takes up a lot of net. But I think, moves quite well for a guy his size. And so, how much action is he going to get over the course of the year? That'll be something to keep an eye on, as it always is. But I think they're once again a team that should be right in the conversation. Especially, yeah, as you've got Auston Matthews and William Nylander still, and now, Matthew Nye is 1 year older, re-upping with Max Domi. We'll see what happens, with Mitch Marner. But with all those players still very, just in the thick of the prime of their career, or just kind of still entering the prime of their careers, they're very much, you've got to do what you can to win. And now that with the addition of, Craig Berube behind the bench, how he's going to put his stamp on things. Like, I'm always curious about that, right? Because these guys have been playing together for a long time now. Like, you kind of, what they are as players and what their strengths are. Like, how much of a difference can a new head coach really make? Like, I remember when Rod Brindamore first got hired in Carolina, he was saying, like, the most part across the league, like, a lot of us teams are doing the same thing in terms of systems, and at least we all know what we're all doing. There's not a lot of secrets out there. So as a coach, it's like, you're managing people, right? Like, how are you getting the most out of these individuals? So I'd be wonder how he's going to go about doing that in a market like Toronto.
I want to transition as best I can to the Senators, and we were there just earlier today, seeing Steve Staios, Linus Allmark. Does it feel different, with this team? They've obviously really come out of the gates so slowly, really the past 5 6 years, and last year was such a disappointment, just with the expectations to finally to break into the playoffs. Where do you see this team in terms of the playoff picture, and how would you maybe, assess Steve Staios' off season?
Yeah, I think I give him credit for, like, clearly what he wanted to do, getting it done fairly early in the game and not waiting. Coming right out with making the Chychrun trade, signing David Perron, getting Shane Pinto re-upped, the next day. Obviously, the Allmark trade coming a little bit before that. I mean, there's the Cousins deal that comes, later on in the off season. But adding, a bit more edge to the lineup there. I don't know. It's tough to really say, like, for a team that's missed the playoffs 7 straight years, like, it's hard to say, like, oh yeah, these guys are bona fide playoff team. Like, until you see it. It's hard to say yes, but it's interesting. Like every year now, as they're trying to be like, I feel that they've almost been stuck in neutral for like 3 years, right? I mean, certainly last year it felt like a step back for a whole host of reasons, but it's been a similar kind of overarching messaging going in where it's like it's time for this group to take the next step and to hold each other accountable. And it's not so much that they're a young team anymore; they've been around long enough. Like you hear that a lot at this time of year, the last couple I've found. But now, like the terminology that they're using, right? Like it was in the past, it was, well, we don't want to put any expectations on anything. We're just trying to, we want to play meaningful games for a while. And then it was, we're just worried about the expectations we have on the inside. And now I heard Brady Tkachuk say in interviews over the summer, and we heard Steve say again today about it's just about, kind of winning our day. And we're worried about doing that again the next day, like being very short-term goal oriented, and then the long-term kind of takes care of itself. So they've gone through the whole list of terminology when it comes to this stuff and buzzwords, which is good. I just like that. I mean, at least there's some quiet now, like there isn't any stuff about the sale, about the Shane Pinto situation last year, the Evgeny Dadonov no trade hoopla around it all. Like, at least for now, none of that is going on. So at least everyone's in place. As Theo said, feet are under us, and now you're giving yourself every opportunity and every reason to get off to a decent start. And now we'll see if they can do it.
If Allmark isn't a success here, do we just give up on having good goaltenders in Ottawa? And I guess that's my best segue to just the Allmark acquisition and how much maybe goaltending and having finally a solid goaltending might be the impetus for this team to finally, I don't know if it'll make them make the playoffs, but be in that real contention for the playoffs.
Right, and how they defend in front of them too, right? Because I mean, as tough as the goaltending was for large stretches of last year, like there are also nights where you're going, well, what else were they supposed to do? Like they just grade A chance in the slot, like just prime scoring opportunities that were being given up. It would be tough for any goalie to have a good save percentage at the end of some of those nights last year. So I think now, I mean, clearly you have him there, and I'm sure it makes everybody a little bit taller in the room, which is a can be a very dangerous thing in a good way. But yeah, I love his attitude and his personality, and even like, I mean, you go back when he first came into the league, and he talked about those tough years in Buffalo where they weren't anywhere close to the playoffs,
He
but
played well.
his numbers were more than respectable for a team that was not very good. And so you can see why, three years ago Boston went, yeah, I think we will give this guy a shot here. And then he took off from there, and has a Vezina trophy to his name. So I think the fact that he went through that time with the Bruins, and I hear a lot about kind of that Bruin way and how they operate, being able to bring a little bit of that here, because he's seen what a winning program and environment looks like. And I'm sure everyone else in that room wants to create something similar here in Ottawa. So what a great asset to have, and the fact that he's a quality goaltender only is icing on the cake. So yeah, if he's anything close to what he's been in Boston the last few years, man, a total game changer for the Sens.
For sure. I'm just happy a quality quote over anything. No.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's funny what happened in the goalie situation here in this town, because for years it was all right, from Lalime to, I mean, even Tugnutt and Bourassa and Hasek for a brief
Close.
period, and Craig
Emery.
Anderson, right? Yeah, Ray Emery and Craig Anderson, of course, had a long run of just you could count on him when it was needed most, other than the occasional goal he'd give up from like behind the goal line. But
Or he'd come out of his net. I still remember against Boston in 2017, him coming out of his net and
oh
just,
yeah.
it was just a pile. I forget who
Yeah.
scored. I think Marchand scored. It was not fun. Not fun. Yeah.
Right. But otherwise, someone you can count on, but yeah, since then it's been a bit of a grind.
Do you th how much do you think maybe with a new coach and kind of similar on the Berube from key, from Keith point where a new coach comes in, many people in the fan base, were pretty ready for a new voice. The team seemed to always sputter in the big moments. Like, how much is coaching just that possibility that a new coach, the new coach bump, gets that team from underperforming to overachieving.
Yeah, I think, or even at least, yeah, playing a little closer to their potential. Yeah, I think again, if you have the right person, it can go a long way. Because I mean, sometimes you see it that new coach bump doesn't always work out right away. But yeah, I think again here in Ottawa, it wasn't the case that the players had turned on DJ and were not tooting him out or anything. I think there was always a great deal of respect, and just the story of the day he was let go and he goes to a watering hole near the hotel or wherever they were, Denver or Arizona, and all the players coming by to have a soda with him and thank him for his years there. Speaks volumes to the lasting respect that he'll have. But I think clearly it was just time for a new voice. And yeah, I've gotten to know Travis a little bit just when he was in Vancouver there and covering some Vancouver games. So I've got a lot of time for him, and appreciate the way he goes about things. I have to laugh at how much attention this whole tough training camp idea is getting, right? And just the fiery quotes of him saying, guys got to come to camp in shape. Like, find me a coach that's like, don't worry about coming to camp in shape. Like, that's what the first month of the year is for, like, nobody thinks that way anymore. So I imagine he'll have some hard skates that'll get the lungs going. But other than that, right? Like, he knows as well as any, like, you need to have your team in a position that can sustain, the energy that's required over 82 games over a long season. So definitely not going to try to burn everybody out off the hop. But I think it's the right time for someone like him to come in, and I can only imagine how much he learned from his time with the Canucks, and even a little bit there with New Jersey as they were going through a very tough year, how to handle certain situations as a coach. I think that it could be a nice partnership there with a group of players that have a lot of potential, but I think have realized where their faults have lied throughout these last few years as well, where they've failed to kind of get to that next level that they were hoping to.
I guess with that, like, where does this team go if they are to fail and maybe not make the playoffs, have an underwhelming season? Like, it feels as though this, I mean, every year it feels like in Sens land, kind of like the Leafs, where it's like, this is the year and it's gone, right?
Right.
But with that, what's the direction of this team if they don't take at least some sort of jump and into the playoffs or at least very close to it? Like, what happens? It feels as though this is a pretty big turning point year for this team.
Yeah, I would say for sure. And I'm not terribly interested in playing the hypothetical game. I kind of cross that bridge when we come to it. But I mean, let's face it, there's a new ownership group in. They just made a bunch of changes to their front office. We've got a new coaching staff in now. I think now if it continues to be an issue, like, do you start to take a deeper look at the current roster and some of the players that maybe you thought were key pieces to the long-term success of the franchise, maybe you start to feel differently about them. But as I say, like, until we get there, it's hard to really know for sure. And if that ends up being the case, how did they get there? What the key issues were, will dictate a lot of it. But I would agree with you in that, I think there's really no excuse this year to not be able to, whatever that ends up being at the end of the year, say we are in a much better place than we were 365 days prior, right? I think there's no more outs anymore for them, which is good. Like, 7 years is a long time. Like, I think about how bad this franchise was coming back into the league in '92. They didn't go this long before making the playoffs. So the fact that it's been this long for this current group, like, I sympathize with the fan base where they're going, like, come on, enough already. They have every right to feel that way.
Do we just believe in the Ian Mendes, you know, whenever he works for the Sens, they make the playoffs? Is that what we
Yes, that's right. That's right. Right. I don't think they haven't missed since he's been a member of the organization, right?
So yeah, that's he's the reverse kryptonite for the Sens.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, and you know, there's no easy way to talk about it, but I think it'd be important. You know, I know you obviously covered the Flames for a long time, or in terms of just like being on Hockey Night in Canada, and obviously just such a tragedy with Johnny Hockey and Johnny Gaudreau and his brother. Is there any kind of memories that you have from, you know, covering him, or anything that you'd maybe want to share about Johnny, you know, being around him a little bit?
Yeah, it was gosh, what a
Ugh.
terrible, terrible situation. Like, it just brutal in every sense and terribly unfair, how it all played out. But I mean, I didn't spend a ton of time around him because he was in Calgary, and I typically, you know, worked out of the East. But I remember, like, my first year working, you know, more so on the NHL side and doing broadcasts. One of my first assignments was covering the Team North America training camp before the World Cup. So it started in Montreal, and then they went up and played an exhibition game in Quebec City, and then played another one in Montreal, and then covered them primarily for the actual tournament itself. So I remember, like, one of their first practices, because, you know, going in, there was a thought of, this is a gimmick, and how are all these kids going to be able to,
To
you
do
know,
it.
hang it with, you know, the top international teams in the world. And, like, you know, they're running their first time going through power play touches, and, you know, he's on a half wall that first unit, and watching those guys snap it around, I just remember thinking, like, oh shoot, like, we may have not have fully thought this thing through. These guys might actually be okay. And as I say, I was still very early in my time, you know, working on a broadcast in that capacity and doing, you know, intermission interviews and things like that. And anytime, you know, we asked for him, he was incredibly gracious and gave thoughtful answers and respectful, and I appreciated that, just given, you know, I would just started, and, you know, nobody knew me from a can of paint at that time, and that's still very much be the case. Might be the case, but you know, I just sort of, like, I know, like, Ryan Leslie, colleague out of Calgary there, knew him quite well, thought the world of him, always spoke very highly of him. I know that, like, the day after the news all came out that him and Matthew tragically had perished, he was on Central with Martin Guiard and told just a wonderful, you know, anecdotal story about a special thing that Johnny and his wife Meredith did for Ryan's daughter on her 13th birthday. I just thought that really gave some insight into the type of person he was, beyond just how brilliant of a hockey player he was too. So yeah, just unfortunately, you know, a reminder of how delicate, like, this whole thing is. And you just think of something like that and how easily avoidable that all should have been, but wasn't, because of some incredibly poor decision making. It sucks.
Well, you said that so poetically and effortlessly, and I appreciate you. I know it's not the easiest topic, but I
No.
you shared it, and I guess, you know, maybe to go from, you know, the somberness of that to something a bit more, you know, playful and joyful to end this podcast. For you, just with, you know, your time in the league, do you have to get ready for training camp? Do you need to get in, you know, training camp shape, the hair, the stylist? What's that like for you to, you know, go from, you know, working your way up in September, the off season, just to get prepared for a 82 game grind?
Yeah, I mean, Barry, our dog here, and I, we play a lot of keep away with the mini stick and a tennis ball down in the basement here. So that's kind of the extent of my off season training before camp, is to make sure that the hands are dialed and stuff like that. No, but I mean, I will say, like, in the summertime, like after free agency, like, I like just not having to think about hockey. And it's not that, like, I'm sick of it or anything, or
No,
I don't enjoy it anymore. It's not like that, but it's just, you want to think
no.
about other things, right? Because you're so immersed in it for so long, it's good to to go somewhere, let your mind go somewhere else. So honestly, the lead up is just kind of reminding myself of what all went on in the off season, and how, seasons ended for certain teams, and just a refresher of kind of where things are at around the league before things get going. But yeah, having a bit of time to decompress at least, gets you excited again about getting back into the swing of things. So it always comes quick, but when once it's here, it's like, all right, we're ready to go. And so that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Do you just have like the same imprint of the Leafs losing in game seven to Boston? So you're like, okay, I don't need to remember. It's every year. I'm good. Okay.
Well, yeah, there's that, and yeah, there's always lots of images from certainly the playoffs, right, that are imprinted in your brain that aren't going anywhere, as much as you try to not think about things. They're always hanging around not too far away.
I'll definitely always think about you interviewing Connor McDavid after, winning the what is it, the Prince of Wales? What's the conference trophy? I forget what it's called for the West.
The Campbell, Clarence
Campbell.
Campbell.
And he was very, open and honest. So I always remember that with the orange beard in the blue, with all the crowd just, yelling and screaming and just ecstatic. So I'll remember that from last year.
That was loud.
Hopefully, not that I have anyone in the game, but it'd be cool to see you maybe do that interview next year in maybe game five or six, so that you have, some time with your wife, but with Connor McDavid and this time the Stanley Cup. But Kyle, thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. I know, you've been so incredibly kind to me with the Senators and covering them, and I appreciate you coming on this little dinky podcast. I guess
Hey,
you,
come on now. This
so
is what, my third time on?
third time on, baby.
Oh man, over halfway to the Five Timers Club.
I know you're almost there, almost there. We need the Sens playoff run to make it get closer to five. That's what we need. That's what
There
we need.
you go. There you go. All right. Well, we'll see if it happens this year. Thanks,
Well,
man. Yeah, very kind of you to say, but yeah, pleasure seeing you again.
We'll definitely do this again, and good luck with getting training camp next week. I'm excited for the hair to be ready, just for the bright
Yeah.
lights. So, but
All right.
thanks again, Kyle. That's
You
great.
bet. I'll try not to disappoint you.